Welcome to Ordinary Fellowship, a podcast inspired by the Puritan practice of godly conference, or spiritual conversations among believers. These spiritual conversations offer practical spiritual help for Christian living. I'm Jeremy Lee, and with me today is my co-host and cicada expert, Matthew McLaughlin.
Hello, Jeremy.
Apparently this is going to be our cicada episode, because everybody's talking about it, I hear.
Well, there are supposed to be a lot of cicadas. I don't know if we'll fill the full time, but, you know, if we get too bad, we'll just play some cicada noise, and that'll make everybody be ready for what's coming.
Well, it could be a sign of the end.
It could be. It would fit in with what some people have been saying for the past year, so, you know.
Okay, well, I don't think I want to talk about cicadas for 5 minutes, let alone 20 to 30 minutes, so let's find something else to talk about.
We can do that.
So, really what we're going to talk about is an article that appeared in USA Today. It's actually from the Cincinnati Inquirer. I shared it on my Facebook a couple weeks ago. It was really, I think, a really great story. And so, there's some things that I'd like to say, and I think Matthew has some things to add about this article, and so we'll have some discussion over it. Let me read for you the headline in the first few paragraphs. 53 years of marriage and 100 foster daughters. This Ohio couple made a home for everybody. They don't remember the names. How could they? Anne and Al Hill fostered about 100 girls, mostly teenagers, over nearly three decades. What they do remember, in some cases what they'll never forget, are the streets where the girls moved after they left, because they visited them. Their daughters had gone off to college, and their home in Cincinnati felt empty. To the Hills, it wasn't a big deal. To hear them tell it, bringing strangers into their home and caring for them as if they were their own kids was no more difficult than a trip to the grocery store. This is what makes the Hills remarkable. They don't think they did anything special. There's a lot more to the story, and I will share the story as we share this podcast on our Facebook, but it really is a remarkable story about a remarkable couple. First, to me, the 53 years of marriage is worthy of comment and commendation, for sure. I don't think the divorce statistics are as bad as they're often made out to be. It still is quite unusual to hear of someone who's been married as long as this couple, the Hills, have been married. It's a remarkable example to their own children. Sadly, one of their daughters recently died. She's 46 years old and died of cancer, but a remarkable example to their family, to the community, about what marriage is supposed to be. You know, no doubt the Hills had their failures. We're all sinners. But the fact that they endured, stuck it through, no doubt some very difficult times, and they're still together at 53 years. The picture in the news article shows them holding hands together on their front porch. That in and of itself, I think, would be worthy of a newspaper story and something to comment about. You know, marriage is looked down upon by so many today. It's either you can completely reinterpret it to make it to whatever you want to be, or it's completely irrelevant and doesn't even matter. It's just a piece of paper. Other social arrangements are just as good, if not better, than marriage. These folks, I think, show the difference and really set a good example, not just for their children, but for the community, and now nationally, with it being covered in a USA Today article.
Right. I would wholeheartedly agree with all that you said, Jeremy. I think it is a good example for everyone to see that they were willing, because ultimately they had failures, but I'm sure they had difficulties along the way, and they stuck with it. They didn't bail. They didn't quit. They stayed committed, and because of that, it demonstrates the longevity that they showed is just an example to the community, and as you said, to everyone around. And I think it's something for those who are married to understand that it can be used as a picture to show those around the importance of marriage.
Right.
And the value that's there, especially to a generation that is increasingly questioning the validity of marriage, even as the stats show that most of the other social constructs that are proposed don't accomplish nearly what they say that they will accomplish.
And when they, you know, when they talk about their foster care, they say they were able to do it because they were a team. They
right.
worked together to take care of 100 at least girls who came through their house. They were a team. And that's part of what marriage is about, is being a team like that. Not only taking care of your own children, but to love and care about others as well. Marriage is more than just teamwork. Marriage involves being a companion and so many other things, but it's not less than being a team. And the fact that they treated their vows as something sacred and important. People make vows, but there's not always, you know, they got prenuptial agreements where they've already basically prearranged their exit strategy. These folks really, in their long marriage, repudiate that and are a great example
right.
to us. May their tribe increase in this example, as well as what they do as far as caring for foster girls. So any other thoughts on their example as far as marriage goes, Matthew?
No, I think just if we just need to understand their example, and those who have been blessed with a marriage should strive to be that example to everyone else who isn't married or who is struggling in marriage, that you just, I think ultimately it's just a good example.
Yeah. It'd be great to sit on their front porch and ask them how they made it.
Yes, it would.
But we don't have that privilege, so let's talk about what, especially I think the article was about, is the fact that they cared for at least 100 foster girls for, I think they said, 3 decades, 30 years. They cared for 100 different girls. They cared for strangers. Anyways, a passage of the Bible that comes to my mind when I think about them is James chapter 1, verses 26 and 27, where the Bible says, "If anyone thinks he is religious and does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his heart, this person's religion is worthless. Religion that is pure and undefiled before God the Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their affliction and to keep oneself unstained from the world." Now, I don't know whether the Hills are Christians. They did mention a Bible verse in the article, but I don't know whether they're faithful Christians or not. It never said anything one way or the other. If they aren't, they're really a rebuke to many Christians for their attitude of caring for orphans, caring for the fatherless. If they are Christians, then they really demonstrate a Christian attitude toward those who are in need. And that is much to be commended. And I can't read this verse without saying that, you know, there's a lot of memes and people talking about Christianity not being a religion, but a relationship. I think these verses say quite the opposite. Just have to get that little pet peeve in there. Christianity is a religion. It's more than just religion, but it is a religion. And it says so in the Bible. James 1, 26 and 27 talks about Christianity being a religion. So it's right in the Bible, so please stop saying that it's not a religion. Anyways, on to the topic at hand. The Hills really demonstrated this in a way that goes beyond my imagination. And even in the fact The reporter says that they don't even know that what they did is anything remarkable. The humility there, and she said it. I kind of chuckled to myself because the reporter, I think it was a woman, I don't know. The reporter said that they didn't think it was any more difficult to take care of these girls than a trip to the grocery store. Apparently, the reporter's never gone to the grocery store with infant twins. That can be difficult. But anyway.
He says from personal experience.
Anyway, there's so much to be commended, not in just what they did, but in their spirit of humility and the way they went about it. They're really a great example. And you know, as Christians, and we've done an episode on being pro-life, we're opposed to abortion. If we are able, with God's help, to stop the scourge of abortion, this is our responsibility to foster, if you're able to, this is our responsibility. But even more so if abortion goes away, if we're successful in repealing these laws that allow for the murder of children in the mother's womb, even more so will we need to step up for this. And I know in my own life, in our own church, there are people who have fostered and adopted. I have friends who are fostered and adopted. You know, you've seen the memes from liberals who accuse Christians of not doing these things, but the fact is that Christians are doing these things. And in many cases, it's Christian organizations that are getting kids put up for adoption, and Baptist Children's Home is one example. So Christians are for adoption, for foster care, and caring for others. And those who can do things like this really should. And the Hills are a great example and encouragement for us to be that kind of Christian where we're caring for the fatherless and the orphans.
Yes, I do think it's something that, in reality, I'm not sure that we take as seriously as we should. Yes, we need to fight the scourge of abortion. That is a vital and important endeavor. But I would say, almost to the same level, the scourge of fatherlessness and the amount of children that don't know what love looks like. They don't have the familial bonds that they need, which we'll talk about more in a couple minutes.
And some of it's because of the diminishment of marriage.
Right. But I think that's completely right. That back to why the Hills are such an example, both in their marriage but also in the fostering. But I think it should be a challenge to those Christians who, if they have the means and the ability, they should prayerfully consider whether or not this is something God has called them to do. Because like you said in James, it is one of the primary ways, James says, this is what religion looks like, is to take care of the widows and the orphans. And so therefore, we need to consider it and what it looks like and whether or not God is calling us to this task to demonstrate his love and care and concern for those who are without something that he intends for them to have.
Yeah, and no doubt you're right that we can do better. We can always do better. But I think that, I know it's not surprising to you either when Christians do these things.
No.
We know that's what Christians do.
Right.
They are involved in foster care. They are involved in adopting for a variety of reasons, and it's a good thing to do. It's an encouraging thing to do, regardless of abortion. But even with the fact of abortion, it's even more important, and especially if you know you have a Christian couple, a father and a mother, who can be a stand-in father and mother to these people who have never had one. Because one of the things that's happening is because of the gender revolution, it's almost as if genders are irrelevant. The kids can do just as well with two moms as or two dads or whatever the makeup of the family is, and the fact that they don't have a male role model in the house doesn't really matter. But we know that's not the case. We know that children need a mother and father. And sadly, there's times where that, for a variety of reasons, that can't happen. Marriages fall apart because of abuse, because of adultery, addiction. Mothers and fathers sadly die. There's people who are hurting that would love to have that ideal but can't. And we're not trying to overlook that at all, but neither do we want to set the ideal down so low. The ideal is a husband and wife together for life who together raise their children, because men and women are, both genders are blessings from God, and children need both genders in their lives so that they flourish the best. I feel like I'm rambling on and on.
Right, no, I would agree with you. And the thought just came to my mind in that we might not be able to stop someone from having an abortion, but if we would actively consider fostering, we are in essence possibly stopping someone from having an abortion, because one of the factors that, if we're just honest, that leads to abortion is a sense of hopelessness, and it's a perpetuation. It just continues. And so if we provide hope by providing them that which God intends for them to have, because in his creation, he created male and female, he created fathers and mothers, like you were talking about, and we create that culture and that support system that they don't feel like they have, so that the only recourse they feel like they have is abortion because they can't do it, then in essence, by fostering, by adopting, we are also fighting the plight of abortion.
Right, right. I agree. Another aspect of this I want to consider is that I do think the Hills are remarkable, and I'm not trying to downplay what they are doing. In one sense, I want to say they're remarkable, but what I see in the Hills is a representation of what America's like. This is what America is about, loving and caring for our neighbors. Now, you won't see that on the nightly news, and not that I'm saying that there's no truth to what's being portrayed on the nightly news, but the news is absorbed about what happens in Washington, D.C., and everything centers around the Capitol and what the government's doing, and there's a lot of frustration and anger and things going on about there. But what I'm talking about is this is what normal, everyday Joes or Susans or whatever the generic name you want to plug in, this is what Americans do. When I lived in Michigan, our church was involved in a nursing home facility. We did once a month, we did rotation with other churches where we did a church service for the folks in the nursing home. And they had a dinner every year to recognize the people there who were involved and volunteered, because this nursing home was associated with a hospital. They were housed in the same building and everything. So some of the people there were people who had volunteered for the hospital. And I can't remember the number of hours, but the older retired women who sit at the front and give you directions on where to go in the hospital, or who are at the gift shop waiting on you as you buy flowers and other gifts to people in the hospital, they had donated multiplied hours, hundreds of thousands of hours to the hospital because they're just there to care for other people. That doesn't make the news. Other than the hospital itself recognizing them, nobody else would ever even know about that. And if you just think about a rural fire department where it's all volunteer, those guys not only volunteer to go out at the beck and call whenever there's a problem, but they give up their weekends constantly for training. And they're volunteers. They're there all, they have meetings through the week, they have training in the weekends, they work regular jobs through the week, and they give of their time. They might have a variety of motivations for doing these kind of things, but any small community in the United States, you're going to see men and women volunteering for the fire department to care for their neighbors by responding to emergencies like that. Again and again, you see this all. And these are just two examples that I have of how people volunteer. When I think about the goodness of America, this is what I think about. What happens in Washington frustrates everybody. Nobody's happy with that. To me, this is what the goodness of America is about. People have freedom, and they have freedom to care for their neighbors, and many, many people do just that. And I'm sure that if I went in with the Huber Heights police or the Dayton police tonight, if I went out them on their cruise overnight tonight, I'd be more disappointed in humanity. I'm sure there'd be great disappointment in that. There are a lot of good, positive things that go on here that go unnoticed, that nobody knows about, that makes our country go. We could talk about dirty jobs that people do every day that don't get recognized, and there's just so many good, positive things that happen. If we would be more careful to look at or find those things, I think we'd have more hope in our future than if we constantly looked to Washington, D.C. to be the barometer of whether everything's good or bad. I think we'd be a whole lot better off.
No, I would completely agree with that sentiment, in that media, by definition, is seeking ratings. They're seeking opportunities to make money because they're a business. And so if you're a business, you're going to try to make money, which means you have to generate viewers, which means you have to create controversy. It's what you have to do because you need eyeballs, because the more eyeballs you get, the more money you get. And so while stories like The Hills or so many other stories, like you were talking about, volunteer fire departments or volunteers at a hospital or people who give up their time to go coach Little League or softball or youth sports or work in a historical society or so many other things. The list, we could just, so much time coming up with those, might not make the news. And so it's easy for us to come to the place where we think that's not special, it's not extraordinary, it's anything. But in reality, those are the things to which we should spend our time celebrating, as opposed to some of the, in all honesty, ridiculously on the verge of absurd things that we spend our time celebrating. It just shows how it's easy for us to get our priorities in our minds out of whack, out off-centered, off-kilter. And so I think we would do well to spend some time getting off of social media and going out in our community and just looking around and seeing the good that people are doing. When we say good, we just mean just a generic good, the common grace that people are sharing and participating in, and finding ways in which we also can participate in that common grace and distributing that common grace to the community we reside in, because it makes the community a better place.
For everybody.
For everyone.
And I think part of the problem, we've gotten so accustomed to, if there's a problem, we look to Washington, D.C. to be the one to fix it, instead of coming together as a community and talking about it and trying to deal with the problem. The Hills saw a problem and knew that they could help and started helping. That, I think, is what we need to return to, an attitude like that. Not that there's nothing the federal government can do. If the problem is resolved at the community level, then that we have more freedom. And we'll see that our neighbors are human beings, and we won't dehumanize them as seeing them of a bundle of ideas that we oppose as we engage them on Facebook or Twitter. There are so many reasons why this community-centered involvement, like what the Hills are doing, is such a blessing. It will give you a more positive outlook, I think, on life. It will help you to be more positive and get to know your neighbors better and to see that there's many good people in the sense of civic good, not absolute good or salvific good, but you'll see the goodness of people, and then we won't be so reliant on everything being handed down, top down from the government. I don't want to turn this political, but there is obviously a political aspect to it.
There is, but I want to read the – so Jeremy read the beginning of the article. I want to read the last couple paragraphs of the article. The writer says this. He says, maybe it seems easier now because Anne and Al are both retired from working and fostering. Because while this story is about the Hills, it's also about the girls, even the ones who ran away or stole from them. The Hills couldn't save everybody, but some of their foster girls still visit for Thanksgiving dinner. Some of them still call. And for Anne, that's enough. One of these days, we'll do a longer episode on this last idea I want to spend some time talking about. But I think one of the things this article reinforced to me is the fact that all of us desire community. There's an innate desire in us for community, to be seen, to be understood, to be a part of. That requires us, though, to step outside of our comfort zone. Because in reality, for Anne and Al, for the Hills, it would have been easier for them not to do what they did. Because if they wouldn't have done what they did, they wouldn't have to have dealt with the runaways and the problems that come from that. They wouldn't have to deal with losing their property and their stuff. They wouldn't have to deal with the extra situations and problems and headaches that they face because they made this decision. But they understood, they made the conscious decision that these girls needed family and they needed community. I think that should be a challenge to us, that do we seek to, as Jeremy was just talking about, do we seek to make community? Do we make community with our neighbors? And then to kind of tone it a little bit, not just that we see community because we desire for civic good, but as Christians, do we see the opportunity to make community because we hunger for a desire for salvific good, because we want to minister into people's heart and then to show them when they ask us, why are you doing this? It produces the opportunity for us to express the gospel. I think of a story of there's a lady in our church who she spent time with her neighbor, and her neighbor's sister is now dying. And that, because of the good that they shared between each other, this lady in our church had the opportunity to sit for an hour to an hour and a half and just explain, this is the gospel. That situation only arose because she went outside of her comfort zone and talked to her neighbor, who, and just to express this common grace, this just civic good that we all strive for. That's what makes America, America. But that led to ultimately being able to present an even greater good, which is that for which Jesus came into this world to save us and to redeem us. But that only came, that opportunity only arose because of the civic good that she was a part of.
You said that people naturally strive for community, and I think in all likelihood, people who are involved in foster care or slash orphans, however you want to say it, or more probably have a greater longing for that, because the basic community, the basic society is the family. That's where that's the first community that we become involved in, is within the family. And if you don't have that, there's, like you said, there's a natural inclination, a natural desire, a natural instinct, if you would, wanting that kind of community. And I think it would be exacerbated by the fact that you don't have that basic unit, that family structure. And the Hills tried to be that community for those girls and were successful at bringing many into that, their family, and they remain part of the family to this day. Not everybody were they successful with, in the sense that they created this communion and everybody went off to live a good life, but a lot more of them are likely successful as adults now because of what the Hills did. And if the Hills weren't there, where would they be?
Right. So our encouragement to you is seek good. Seek civic good. Seek opportunity to be an example to your neighbors, to your community, to all those who God has given you the good fortune to come into contact with. Be the example God has called you to be. But for now, we thank you for listening to this episode of Ordinary Fellowship, a podcast ministry of Two Rivers Community Church. For more information about Two Rivers, you can find it on our website at www.tworiverscc.org. We look forward to your questions, your comments, and even that dreaded hate mail at ordinaryfellowship@gmail.com. Please follow us on Facebook at Ordinary Fellowship and like and subscribe to this podcast on whatever platform you listen to us on. But for now, we thank you for listening to this episode of Ordinary Fellowship, where we strive to have spiritual conversations for practical Christian living.